God forgives us our weaknesses so long as we...
So long as we would. I haven't seen a sign of God lately. I mean, is he even listening?
Well, maybe his silence is essential to our free will.
I think that there has been a change in the basics of human nature. Something old, brutal, and hellish is here.
I don't think that you're crazy to think that.
You sense it. Nobody can do anything about it. It's like the darkness that hangs in the air even when it's sunny and light. It's like God just locked up and left. Adios.
And so what if he did, Lois? What if he's gone? What if that's exactly what he's done?
Big Daddy's left and gone on a business trip, so we have the codes. We know the rules that goodness is governed by.
And maybe this is his way of telling us that it's time that we figure this shit out on our own.
He didn't just leave, Father. He left the keys to the candy store to the devil.
Happy heresy, then. Happy Halloween, everybody, or happy season of the witch. Yes, you just saw a scene from the Hulu series Grotesquerie and a little Anatole France revolt of the angel sensibility. At first, I thought it was just some typical satanic slasher supernatural, but the series then turns very Jungian, where it's about consciousness and dreams within a dream and layers of reality. And I am still confused after the eighth episode. And I like that. I like it takes edges. It is very, very graphic, very disturbing. It definitely pushes a lot of lines when it comes to gore, but it still has some good philosophy. But that's what we're here for, everybody, to talk about some Gnostic theme movies on this Halloween. And good to see everybody here, even if it's on a Sunday. And with us, it is always a pleasure to have the Bible geek, Robert Price. Bob, how are you?
Losing my voice, but otherwise, in the answer to the prayers of many, I'm sure. But feeling well otherwise, having a lot of fun. How about good you?
Oh, yeah, good. Yeah, we've already been trick-or-treating with the kids around here. They have different celebrations. Like, we went yesterday to the horse ranch where the kids could trick-or-treat and pet the horses. And today there was some event where they could handle snakes and tarantulas and trick-or-treat. So a lot of fun, a lot of work. But
Ophite training.
We met the Ophites.
Either that or the Pentecostals.
Yeah, one of the two are the Nassines.
They do five snakes at a time.
Uh-huh. Yes, and hello, Vance. How are you doing on this Halloween?
Hey, great. Season? Always nice to see Robert Price back. It's been too long.
Oh, yeah.
Looking for a fun night.
Indeed, time flies. And with us, too, we've got, it's good to be joined, too, on this round table with Mr. Graham Pong. He's got his Cthulhu outfit tonight. Graham, how are you doing?
Oh, very good tonight. Yeah, added in honor of Dr. Price, wear the Cthulhu outfit. I know how he loves Lovecraft.
Oh, yeah, I sure appreciate that. Yeah, in fact, I just made an Abdul al-Hazred custom action figure.
Oh, wow. Very cool. Very cool. Hopefully he doesn't get eaten by demons.
And nice.
It's possible, because I also made a Yog-Sothoth, and if I can get him over here, it's a little hard to wrangle, but this is he.
Very nice. So you made those?
Last time I saw him, that's what he looked like. Yeah, but
Yeah. And maybe tell the audience that you have your annual ritual where you watch a certain amount of movies before Halloween, or tell the audience about that, because I enjoy reading your commentaries on Facebook.
Yeah, years ago, my daughter Victoria and I, well, actually, this started back, about 20 years ago when we just moved down here to North Carolina. I remembered how great it was when I was 8 to 10, somewhere in there, down in Jackson, Mississippi, there was this local theater called the Capri Theater. And every Saturday, you could go in there and watch an episode of an old movie serial, Batman, Captain Video, etc., and then see a double feature of sci-fi or monster movies. And that was so great in my childhood that I thought, well, you're never going to find that again, but you can make it yourself. So Victoria and I would use our library of DVDs and such and do the same thing. I would have an episode of The Adventures of Captain Marvel or whatever, and then see a real good sci-fi flick and a sleazy cheapo what the hell are they called? The Invasion of the Saucer Men or something like that. And it was just so much fun. And so we did that for a long time. And then she finally moved away. But we each keep doing it just on different sides of the country and keep a record of it. And so I think I'm up to 60 or something, but she's probably done twice that. Last night I watched the TV movie of Salem's Lot and an old Boris Karloff weird one called The Devil Commands. And the night before that, a bunch of Lugosi movies. And tonight I'm going to watch Night of a Demon. And oh boy, what fun it is. I'll never stop doing it. I recommend it to anybody and everybody.
What do you think? I'm the same way. Around this time of the season, I get a hankering for horror movies. And it doesn't end till like January or February. I'm like the Western Europeans. I don't know why. It just comes and I have to watch horror movies all the time. My wife gets worried about me. I don't care how gory or scary. But then around March, I switch. I start watching Disney movies, listening to Christopher Cross. Is this a natural part of the human, right? Is catharsis, shadow projection? Is that why we like this stuff, Bob?
I assume so, because it must appeal to a vital and deep part of us. I mean, it is such. I watched tonight an episode from Creepshow, the second season, called Model Kid, where this kid is like me. He's got rooms filled with horror movie and monster paraphernalia. And his dad's out of the picture. His mom is dying of cancer, and she sympathizes with him. She watches these flicks with him, but then she dies. And so he's put into the care of his aunt and his caveman, stupid, brutal uncle who has no patience for his hobbies and ridicules the kid, until finally in an issue of Creepshow magazine, there's this ad for an Aurora model of a victim to go along with your monsters. And you write in the name of the victim because you're going to use it as a voodoo doll. And he does, and it's his uncle. And he's been watching this flick called The Gill Man versus the Mummy. Oh, I wish there were such a flick. And in fact, since I watched it earlier, I've been working on a custom action figure of their version of the Gill Man. Show you what a nut I am. Well, in other words, it works, and he polishes off his uncle, and there he is in his Dracula regalia watching his movies by himself. That's me. I mean, I don't think I would try to engineer somebody's death, but that is me. I'll never grow out of that, and I don't know why I should.
Exactly. It's a thrill. Yeah. Recently, I think last weekend, I watched Caddo Lake on Max. Pretty good. Time Portal, kind of spooky, PG-13. I watched M. Night Shyamalan's A Trap. That is some goofy movie. Completely goofy. Not scary at all. Just goofy. And you end up getting on the side of the serial killer. I don't know who plays him, does a great job, but it just goofy. But then I watched last night Long Legs with Nicolas Cage, And I know I'm going to say this is the most unhinged Nicolas Cage, but the truth is, every movie that Nicolas Cage is his most unhinged. We've been hearing that for 40 years, right? But this one, he is unhinged. He plays the serial killer, and it ends up being, a satanic Catholic. And to me, it doesn't bother me. I guess growing up Catholic, you know, gore, death, the devil being a sadist, you're just used to it. But a lot of critics and people I saw were really disturbed. But movies like that, or The Exorcist, or... they just don't bother me, but a lot of people were disturbed. But I thought it was a good movie. It wasn't even that gory, but yeah, Nicolas Cage was, he was the happiest he could be, because he gets to play just this insane serial killer. He's the villain, so he gets to have fun.
How about Pig? You like that one?
I love Pig. Such That's a great. Good movie. Yeah, yeah.
I've never seen any of the ones you mentioned, I'm ashamed to say.
Well, more for you.
Yep.
It is the golden age of horror movies. They've been revitalized, and there's a lot of good stuff, but a lot of terrible stuff. So, well, then why don't we get to the main event first for the audience, since today is kind of a fun holiday conversation. If you have any questions, I will try to get to them. Don't have to super chat them. Of course, appreciate your support to keep the lights of the Pleroma on, but we will try to get your questions. It doesn't have to be horror. If you have a question or two for Bob about Gnosticism or Christian history, we'll try to get to that too. So if I were to say, Bob, top four movies that are horror that have Gnostic themes, what would those be for you? And then I'll go to Vance and Graham.
Well, the number one movie for me in terms of Gnosticism is Eye of the Devil with David Niven, Deborah Carr, Sharon Tate, Donald Pleasance, and others. Great cast. And I love the movie itself, which I'll get to, but it has a special importance to me because many years ago, I was just turning the channels and to see what was on, and there was this scene suddenly that turned out to be from Eye of the Devil, but I had no way of knowing what it was. A woman in like fox hunting regalia is in a hillside mausoleum clearing the leaves away from a kind of a plaque in the tomb, and she's reading it. And she says, "I would be saved, and I would save, but 12 dance on high. He who danceth not knoweth not what cometh to pass." And I scribbled this down. I said, "What is that? They can't have just made it up for the movie because it's too oblique in reference to that." Well, years later, I found out that this is a quote from the Acts of John. That's part of the round dance of the Savior, where it's about Jesus at the Last Supper telling the disciples to form a circle around him and hold hands and dance. And he does this antiphonal chant: "I would be saved, and I would save. I would redeem, I would be redeemed," and on and on. And it's, of course, about the Gnostic doctrine of the redeemed redeemer, like in the Hymn of the Pearl. Right. And I was just astounded. And then it fits with the whole movie because Deborah Carr's husband is the lord of the manor in French wine country. And at the beginning of the movie, a servant comes to where he lives in Paris now and tells him some awful news. And he's immediately aghast. We don't know what is happening, nor does his family. But it turns out that the vineyards have failed for the third year in a row. And by tradition, the lord of the manor has to offer himself as a human sacrifice so that his blood can renew the ground. And he's going to do it. And his wife has no idea what's going on or what's bothering him. He says, "Now, I'm going to go to the vineyard for a while. I don't know how long I'll be there, but I can't take you with me." Well, the next day she goes anyway with her kids, and she's in the big castle with him, and he's acting weird, and she's trying to find out what the hell is going on. And eventually, by dribs and drabs, she learns that there's this secret cult that all the villagers are in on. And it seems to have something to do with Mithraism, but there's more to it than that. It's based on a novel called The Day of the Arrow by Philip Lorraine. And eventually, you know what happens. The whole idea of a medieval survival of some kind of Gnosticism that may not even understand its roots, but involves human sacrifice and a veneer of Christianity, like they're the Cathari or something. It is so eerily done. And of course, the modern viewer knows Sharon Tate was butchered by a religious cult. Yeah. It's so weird. And Carol and I met partly because of that movie, because we happened to be at a reception at a philosophy professor's house years later. And I knew the movie was on, and I flipped on the TV and saw part of it. And Carol said, "What is that?" And I told her it's about Gnosticism. And she said, "Oh, she's interested in that." And that's where we hit it off. And 40 years later, we're still happily married. But even if I hadn't met her, I'd love that movie. It's like The Wicker Man, only in my humble opinion, even better.
Wow.
It
was the bridal chamber for you and Carol.
Yeah, right? Never thought of that. That's right. Yeah, boy. Valentine's Day and Valentinianism all in one.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I got to check out that movie for sure.
Oh, yes. I can't wait to hear what you think of it.
Great. Any other movies that come to the top of your head?
Well, the big Gnostic one isn't a horror movie, but it's The Matrix. And that is, almost overtly, and we happen to know because of background info that it was definitely based on Gnosticism per se. Mm-hmm. And it makes such a great presentation of that. Beyond that, I'm not sure. I love some of the ones that were on your lists, but some of them I didn't readily associate with Gnosticism, like The Prisoner, which had great formative influence on me when I saw it when I was in junior high. I've never lost the lesson of uncompromising individuality, nonconformity that taught me. But I understand now how it is Gnostic. That here you are expected to adjust to a false reality, and it would be easier to do that. But you know that's not the truth, and you've got to try to escape, because even if you can't, it's still some inner freedom to realize that this world is not my home. I'm a stranger in a strange land. Another one that is even less overtly Gnostic is The Shawshank Redemption. Here's this guy who's sunk in the miry pit, literally the sewer of the material world with all the fallen people, and a guy in charge, the warden, ostensibly pious but horribly corrupt. He's the demiurge and his brutal archons and all that. So what does Andy Dufresne do? He learns the lesson of Viktor Frankl in The Man's Search for Meaning, and tries to make the below as the above. He can't get out of this hell world, so he does what he can to replicate the responsibilities and the privileges he had because of his skills in the upper world. And it becomes sort of tolerable. And yet, in his biggest gambit, to humanize this hell world, playing the opera records that were donated into the prison yard, where all these guys have obviously never heard the like of it and are like pausing in awe. Meanwhile, the archons are battering down the door, and he suffers. Well, he's the redeemed redeemer, and finally does manage to get out. And the guys who die, like the one who was the librarian before him and read almost, they know no higher reality. They don't like prison, but they like the free world less. And so they're just going to die. And it's as if they're going to be reincarnated, because it'll be more of the same meaningless death in life. But Andy redeemed becomes the redeemer by giving Red this sort of ritual. If he can find the mystery here, the hidden treasure, then he can join him in the Pleroma. And again, I don't know if these guys ever even heard of Gnosticism, but that's kind of the point. You don't have to. It's going to pop up again and again, because it's deeply buried in everybody, or at least a lot of people.
No, that's very well said. The prisoner, obviously, as Vance has talked about, extremely Gnostic, I would say.
Not a number.
I am not a number. I'm a human being. I think something like in the category that it's horror, but it's not that scary. In fact, I would say it's a documentary on my list. I had John Carpenter's They Live. That's straight out of a cosmic Gnostic, you know, with the glasses, Roddy Piper. And
Yeah. I couldn't place it for a second. Right.
You know, the aliens
terrible knowledge.
The aliens are controlling us, though, through those glasses. We can see how they put in the billboards, obey and all that. And he has to find a way to defeat them. So there's quite a few. But let me bring in Vance. Tell us some of yours.
Well, one of them that always gets me because of the atmospherics of it and the religious element is The Prince of Darkness by John Carpenter.
I love it.
Oh, yeah, with the green slime in the basement and the whole thing and the way it builds up, and then the end is so, I mean, it's just over the top. believe it or not, I think Forbidden Planet, that old sci-fi classic, it's a monster movie because there's a monster, but it's the monsters from the id. And that's very deep because, you know, aren't the archons being sourced through us, being channeled through us, all the atrocities that humans commit upon each other? So Forbidden Planet, I'm watching right now, I'm in the middle of it, right before part, I think we're at part 7, almost to part 8, the Twin Peaks The Return. And definitely, you know, with the Black Lodge and all that, definitely Gnostic elements in there.
You see the demiurge, that Judy thing.
Judy, yeah. It's amazing, and how, you know, the portal through the dimension comes to us, you know, and all so forth. And Bob, you know, Bob. The Devil's Advocate is another interesting one. That's another one that builds up. And at the end, we got the devil. Hey, man. But I like the way they portray the devil.
I thought you were still talking about the Twin Peaks thing. Yes, Devil's Advocate. Oh, what
Al Pacino,
Oh, yeah. And, you know, I kind of almost liked the guy. I mean, it wasn't, he wasn't making, you know, the main protagonist bad, but the main protagonist chose it. And then at the end, it all reverses. It's kind of cool. So,
you know, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
The idea that the devil really is George Soros. He's a man corrupting the world the way rich, infinitely powerful James Bond villain type guys actually do. And it shows you the devil is, it's like what we say about the political character of the principalities and powers. Right. Are there disembodied spirits behind these thrones? I don't know, but it doesn't make any difference because they are both the rulers and the tools of super-personal reality, sociologically speaking. They're exactly. like the Frankenstein monsters created by humans to serve humans, but in the very next generation, they become gods because they existed prior to the new generation of humans. It's so profound. I got to toss this in. I wrote a, you ever watch House, the medical detective guy?
Yeah.
I did a story called Gregory House Reanimator, where I tied him in with Herbert West, because in one episode of House, he sends a couple of his students, whatever, to the apartment of a guy that played a sorcerer in a Renaissance fair. And they sneak in there looking for something. And lo and behold, they find the Necronomicon and steal it. I mean, it's labeled right across the cover, and they bring it back to House, and he's looking through it, and we don't hear any more until my story, where he decides to look through this thing, and he says, is it possible? And so he's going to try to restore life, and he calls up a wealthy colleague in Boston and says, I have a reference here to something called Tana leaves that can raise the dead. Are they still in existence? And can you get them, pharmaceutical guy? And he does. And House starts reviving his opponents from earlier episodes of the story and getting revenge on them. But it seemed to fit so well together, all of it. And House faces these big wig $1 million donors that want to control him, and it so fits. So I would even say that's kind of Gnostic.
For and sure. Needs a screenplay, huh? Get it in the movies.
Yeah.
Oh, I was looking at some of the comments here. Somebody mentioned the Adjustment Bureau, the movie, but that's based on a Philip K. Dick novel. So it's going to be Gnostic one way or another.
Yeah.
The Road, the movie, Cormac McCarthy, hugely influenced by Gnosticism. So you have it, you have those by default, or by it's going to be infused with that sort of sensibility, because that's what these authors were into and studied and all that.
Well, I'm really going senile because I forgot to mention Cormac's McCarthy's Blood Meridian. A book that I read that book, and I thought it's beautifully written, but I didn't get it until I read a book. Can't think of another woman's name.
Petra Mundick.
Yeah.
A barbarous god. Yeah.
And she shows how thoroughly Gnostic the thing is. And I thought, from beginning to mackerel, she's right. And that is amazing. So that would be high on my list.
Yeah, for sure. And hopefully, I don't want them to make into a movie. Yeah, it's like, sometimes it's so obvious. Like, I've been studying William Burroughs, and I'm like, oh my God, William Burroughs is just Gnosticism. Yeah. I mean, once you just kind of flinch and you see what he's doing, and Burroughs admitted it. He said, when a reporter said, what do you consider yourself? I'm a Gnostic. I'm a Manichaean. That's my worldview. I mean, just said that to the press. So it's more than you think. Well, let's bring Graham. Graham, tell us maybe your top Gnostic-themed horror movies, or just horror movies in general. Talk about Showgirls if you don't want
to. I'm still trying to forget the memory.
Trying to recover from Showgirls? Okay.
No, I was going to say Event Horizon with Sam Neill is certainly a great one, where you go faster than the speed of light, and you get to the pleromic sort of concept.
Mm.
Very true.
Stigmata, I think, is a strong one.
Yeah, and definitely.
One that I don't know exactly, it's not really supernatural horror, but it's kind of horror, is The Game with Michael Douglas.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, what the heck is real there?
Yeah, and I was going to weigh in. What I think the big appeal of horror movies are is it's a safe scare, where you're both safe, but you can feel like you're in danger at the same time. And that sort of juxtaposition of opposites is very appealing to people.
So you're basically, so you can go, but the thrill of being scared, are you talking about the adrenaline, a projection? What do you think, Graham? I mean, or, exactly. Or just to get ourselves acclimated to the horror of the universe to say, you know, this could happen to me, but I'm over here safe because there's things that go bump in the night.
Exactly. It's the experience of going through the horror, the fear, and being safe afterwards. It's like a roller coaster ride to a certain extent.
Mm-hmm. I've always been too chicken to take one of those rides. To even the idea of the horror movie having both the fright and the fascination, I've always used that as a great example of the numinous experience conveying both the mysterium tremendum and the mysterium fascinans, mm-hmm. because some terrible thing is about to happen so bad you don't want to see it and you cover your eyes, but then you start looking through your fingers because you got to see it. That is exactly it. You're afraid it's going to be overwhelming, but you, for that very reason, you must see it.
Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah, somebody mentioned Shutter Island, Martin Scorsese, I believe he did it. Yeah, that's very Gnostic too. Leonardo DiCaprio, about false reality and identity. So yeah, we could put, it's not really horror, it's more of a mystery thriller, but these things overlap. And Bob, yeah, you're talking about, I agree with you, Misterio Fascinan and Tremendous, you know, like when in the Bible, they see an angel and the angel's like, hey, be not afraid, man. I know you're peeing in your pants or your robes, but I'm here with some good news or something like that. When did people start getting interested in ghost stories for entertainment? Do you know? I mean, is it more than the Middle Ages or before that? Do we?
Way back in ancient Greece, there are ghost stories.
Really?
And that's why I read an interesting book where this writer says that the resurrection narratives have a lot of earmarks of ghost stories from the ancient world. Like, why does Jesus in John chapter 20 solve the doubts of Thomas by saying, touch me and see it as I myself? And it's because not necessarily that he's alive in the flesh, it might mean that, but in these ghost stories, ghosts would appear and they're not substantial, but in their ectoplasmic form, they look just as they did when they were dead, so they show the wounds. You see, it's me. And so that threw a whole new light on it to me. I didn't know, but the similarity to ghost stories attests their existing long ago.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, and it's interesting. It's interesting to find out. Yeah, people still had the same sort of entertainment complex, if you would. They wanted to be scared too. People in the chats keep mentioning, and I agree, the Ninth Gate, Roman Polanski, yes. And God, what's his name? Roman, who's the actor? Oh my God, Captain Jack.
Yeah.
Who plays Captain Jack? Or I'm sorry, the pirate.
Johnny Depp.
Yeah, Johnny Depp. Yes, yeah, very good movie.
Yeah, yeah, very. He should have played Jesus in a movie that Paul Verhoeven was working on. I don't think he ever did it. He was going to do a Jesus movie, and he would tell us about it at the Jesus seminar meetings, how much progress he had made and so forth. Well, once he was supposed to be there and couldn't make it, and I was the MC at the moment, I said, well, there goes my chance at getting my copy of Showgirls autographed. Another time, I said to him, you know, you ought to make Johnny Depp Jesus in your movie. And he said, yeah, Johnny Depp is good, but he never made it. I thought he'd have been really great in it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, what type of Jesus movie was he going to make, do you know? Just based on the gospel? The
revolutionary.
The revolutionary theory? Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay.
And the Jesus seminar guys didn't like that. They wanted to see Jesus as more of a cynic philosopher. So they kept trying to discourage him, but he wasn't going to move. But it never made he never made it, unfortunately.
Yeah, that is a pity. Just on a little side question, are you familiar with Dr. Ammon Hillman's work. It's been catching fire. I love his research on mystery religions. I think it's just amazing. I haven't gotten to the Jesus is doing stuff with kids, but are you familiar with his work?
Yeah, I just did a review of his book, Original Sin, mm-hmm. and I'm which he liked amazingly. Agreed to be on a broadcast of the Bible Geek with me. And this is going to be interesting because I know that he is very erudite. He knows Koine Greek better than I know English. And he's very erudite. I'm told he used to work for the Vatican and Bible translation. But the stuff he says about some of the ancient religious orders and so on, he seems to me to be taking things out of context and not only with the Bible and interpreting things allegorically that probably were literal. And then when he gets to Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane, Jesus is arrested as a child molester. What on earth? And I don't care what he says about the lexical matter that, oh, there are many different possible meanings for these words. I cannot imagine that any such possibility linguistically means that the gospel writer meant to portray Jesus as a child molester. What is with this guy? And so, I mean, he is, it's like Festus or one of them says to Paul, your great learning has driven you mad. And it sounds that way to me. So I got my work cut out for me on this show. But he gotta give him credit where it's due. He certainly is learned, but he's got this weird Satanist cult where people drink blood and
projection of his dark shadow.
Yeah, geez. And he's got loads of followers. That's disturbing in its own right.
Yeah.
And I love Satanists. I love any kind of eccentrics. The more, the better. But this is disturbing to me.
89% of business leaders say AI is a top priority. The right choice is crucial, which is why teams at one-third of Fortune 500 companies use Grammarly. Grammarly is the right AI assistant for your team. With top-tier security credentials and 15 years of experience in responsible AI, Grammarly is how companies like yours increase productivity while keeping data protected and private. See why 70,000 teams trust Grammarly at grammarly.com/enterprise.
Oh, well, just was curious. And the other thing, too, I wanted to ask you is, now, I believe that whenever we bring in cosmic horror, again, we mentioned Event Horizon or a lot of this work, again, we include William Burroughs, we should bring in Gnosticism, because I do agree with, like, Hans Jonas, you know, the underling mm-hmm. of Heidegger, who said, I think he did create the atmosphere of existential dread and mm-hmm. cosmic disgust. And I think he gets it right, Bob. And you know, I talked about it. But of course, the difference is that the Gnostics were not nihilists. They thought in the end we're going to win because we have the divine spark. But yeah, this place sucks. And there's these monsters that rule the stars and they control us and they're literally feeding off us. And if we mess with them, they'll wake up and flood our cities or send down the Nephilim. I mean, so cosmic horror, I think, by default, is very Gnostic. Obviously, people like Thomas Ligotti, Clive Barker, William Burroughs, they just took that Gnosticism and gave it, you know, the extraterrestrial lizard monsters kind of thing. So would you agree that cosmic horror by default and Gnosticism just have an overlap you can't miss?
Oh, yeah. And with Lovecraft, and his cosmic futilitarianism, as some call it, that is like the pessimistic style of Gnosticism. But even Lovecraft had an answer to that. He said that life is astoundingly meaningless, and it will end in death. The human race has no more significance in the long run than trilobites or pterodactyls. But while we live it, life is beautiful and fascinating. And from this, even ethics arises, because there is a beautiful as well as an ugly way of living. And I don't know of anybody else that has derived ethics from aesthetics that way, but I think he's right. It's a kind of existentialism, but his old ones are these utterly, he makes them monsters, not just like Toho Studios does, but he's trying to stress there might be powers, and in terms of natural laws, there are, but there might, what if there were entities utterly unhuman, yet vastly superhuman? That would shatter our illusion of being central to the scheme of things. That would be horrifying, to show that we're just flotsam and jetsam. But Fritz Leiber was right. That is also the central religious experience. When I observe the heavens, the work of thy hands, the moon and the stars, which thou hast ordained, what is man that thou art mindful of him? I mean, that's in the Bible too. Mm. And he really grasped that and had the idea of the ineluctable powers, not hostile to man, but inimical to man, that will eventually destroy us. And that's kind of Gnostic. And then it was for Richard Tierney to take that one step further and to link it with classical Gnosticism. He personified the powers even more as the lords of pain, who, as you just said a moment ago, feed off the anxiety and pain that they create among us. It is he and I got to be friends because I wrote something about how the inexplicable couplet in the Necronomicon, that is not dead which can eternal lie, and with strange eons even death may die. I did this tongue-in-cheek scholarly essay about how this must actually be a fragment of an ancient Gnostic liturgy. The ions, the strange eons, are the old ones, and so on and so on. And so we hit off a correspondence, and great guy, great writer. And now, with his permission, I'm carrying on his stories of Simon Magus as a sword and sorcery hero. And oh boy, is it fun.
Good deal. Yeah, good deal. I think somebody mentioned in the chat the Cabin in the Woods by Josh Whedon. It is Lovecraftian, but it obviously is very Gnostic too.
Amen. So,
yeah, so that's a good one. And of course, we've talked about Lovecraft's Gnostic ideas, you know, the idiot god Azathoth ruling the universe, and these other characteristics that he tapped into. And I wanted to do a quote, one of my favorite graphic novels, which is by Grant Morrison, the one that nobody read. It's called Nameless. And he throws in, you know, Mayan apocalypse, Lovecraftian themes, Gnostic. He just throws it in, Christian mysticism. But here's a quote I think really adds or kind of describes very much the Gnostic ethos. And that's when the characters discover the truth of the universe. And let me just read it here. Character goes, "Now consider the possibility that we've always had a disembodied alien life form living among us, invisible yet able to occupy minds and alter them. It hides in plain sight, everywhere. This mind boasts of its own omnipotence. It informs us that we are no more than submissive instruments of its will, then deliberately wills us to defy its rules. All the while, it vows to punish every preordained breach of those rules, however brief or minor, with eternal agonizing torture in a cosmic concentration camp. What name might we give such an omnipresent evil?" And the other character goes, "God. You're talking about God." And of course, the villain is a Lovecraftian horror that's coming to Earth to take over. But I thought Grant Morrison really gets that Gnostic cosmic horror vibe. So
Totally got
Interestingly, in his Justice League comics, twice he has the idea of an alien sun, S-U-N, coming toward the Earth to destroy it. But all the superheroes team up and manage to defeat it. I doubt if he does in this Nameless. I've never even heard of that one. I'll have to read it.
Yeah, nobody bought it. He wrote it, but it's very graphic, very intense, but
wow.
Incredible. It's very much a Cormac McCarthy-ish Blood Meridian. It seems it's nihilistic, and at the end you get that little, there's a spark, and you have to look at it, and if you don't see it, you'll miss it, but it's there. Vance, any questions from you or the audience or comments?
Well, yeah. How about Star Trek original series? Talk about Gnostic horror. How about there's an episode called The Day of the Dove with Kang, the Klingon, and there's this little twirly thing that makes them fight with each other. And in the end, you know, they recognize that there's a twirly thing making them fight with each other. And there's the Demiurge right there. You know, there's the Archons. So
yeah, he feeds off the strife.
Right. And then there's the one where Landru, you must be one with Landru, and they, you know, they all go crazy every once in a while. And that's definitely the Archon controlling. It turns out to be a machine. Of course.
Yeah.
The Demiurge maybe was a machine, but you know, this probably isn't Gnostic, but one of my favorites of all time is the Crawling Eye. Remember that? The Trachtenberg terror, you know, and it had to get a supernatural thing to it because of the psychic girl. Yeah. Remember, it had the psychic girl in it, but I thought the Crawling Eye was just cool with the eye, ooh, you know, looking. It's like, give me the chills.
It's
fantastic. I wish it was Gnostic, but I can't think of a reason why it is.
Well, they show up again in The Simpsons, right? Kang and Kodos.
Oh, yeah, that's right. And, you know, I never connected that. That's right.
With a hint to a wink to Star Trek, too.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly. What about you, Graham? Question or comment or tell us?
Oh, no, I was just commenting in the chat. They were talking about the Matrix, and that's clearly Gnostic. And I was saying what the problem with the Invisibles, and the problem with the Invisibles was the Matrix stole too much from the Invisibles to be viable. And that was one of the reasons that Morrison left DC and JLA, was he was just so upset that they had stolen so much of his ideas for the Matrix. He just, you know, which was another Warner Brothers company, and it's not like they were going to sue themselves.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I mean, to think about it. Yeah. The Invisibles, there's a bald headed guy trying to wake up a kid to the idea he's the savior of the universe.
That's Morpheus is king, Mob.
And so much more. Obviously, it takes from Philip K. Dick and other, but at least it mentions Philip K. Dick in the series. But yeah, the Matrix. The Matrix was certainly something else. I know somebody in the chat mentioned Hereditary. Obviously, that's one of the classics.
Yeah.
I don't know if you can say it's Gnostic, but it's, when it comes to the occult, it's one of the best ones there.
Yeah, I'm saving that one for Halloween night itself. That is really one heck of a flick.
Yeah, I've seen that two or three times. Yeah,
me too. Oh, boy.
It's very good. And if I had to ask you, Bob, what are your top movies that are either Lovecraftian or directly based on Lovecraft that you like? Speaking of Nicolas Cage, did you see Color Out of Space?
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good. Of course, I even liked the original Die Monster Die, which I feel a little guilty about. But yeah, I thought it was pretty good. And my favorite part was when the daughter initiates the whole horrendous series of events by summoning down whatever with a paperback Necronomicon. I thought that is just perfect. But the whole thing was pretty faithful, at least closely analogous to what happens. And I liked it. Certainly better than, what did they call it? The one with... Claude Aiken in it. Oh, dang. And I think Wesley from Star Trek, whatever his name is. What the heck? The Curse, I think it was called. Right. And I thought it was pretty good. Cage's shtick of being insane and just keeping it trying to keep it under wraps, so sort of reminiscent of Jack Torrance in the beginning of The Shining. Of course. I thought that was really well done. Yeah. And I liked it in general. Never bought a copy. Maybe that's the line of where I like it, but not enough.
Yeah, exactly. What about Lovecraftian movie like The Thing? What do you think of John Carpenter's The Thing?
Oh, I think that is terrific.
A masterpiece.
The prequel to it is quite good also, though you don't really need it. And the original Thing from Another World from the 50s, I think that is very interesting, though not exactly... Well, it does have Lovecraftian elements in that the doctor, the professor, he's like a Faustian character, like Lovecraftian protagonists. He will make any sacrifice of himself or anybody else to learn this advanced knowledge that higher beings have, even though he knows he very well might get killed by it. And also the idea of alien life that is so far above us, we're just meat to it. But the ingenuity of the humans, they're in this claustrophobic space with no real weapons or resources, but they're ingenious and manage to come up with a defensive strategy. There's a lot of really great stuff in that, even though it isn't as pessimistic as Lovecraft would be. Oh, what's another good one that I love? It's like there are too many of them, and I can't isolate.
There's quite a few. God, I'd have to think. I have a few lists. Vince, I need to let the cat out. Do you want to ask a question or do super chat?
Okay. Yeah, a poor Mirror D has been waiting for his super chat to appear, and he just wanted to share his top three movies, Rumblefish and Ninth Configuration, which we mentioned before, Eternal Theory, Theater, which I have not heard of myself, and he's appreciating that chat here.
And, I'm not familiar with those.
Yeah, I don't know about Rumblefish either, Ninth Configuration I've heard of. But, hey, if we're looking for a Cthulhu-based one, you could say if you cross Cyclops with Cthulhu, you get the crawling eye.
Yeah, you do. Indeed, you do. Yeah. You
got the tentacles. But, I don't think they don't make Lovecraftian movies very often for some reason. I don't know whether they're hard to produce or whether the stories are too short or obscure or I don't know what it is. What do you think?
Well, Lovecraft said he didn't make any, he didn't develop characters for two reasons. He didn't think he's any good at it. And, but more importantly, he just wanted the character in effect to be no different than the narrator, just a window through which the reader can have the illusion of seeing the suspension of natural law. And so really who cares who the character is? Everything he says and does is simply a kind of framework for the horror itself. That's the star of the show. But for that reason, that's why you get such adulteration in Lovecraft movies. Young lovers like in Die Monster Die more characterization than he would have, and that kind of takes the emphasis and the focus off of the real cosmic horrors. But of course, they too are difficult to depict. It's gotta be anticlimactic. At the Lovecraft Film Festival once, we saw some low-budget thing this big red monster with three heads and mouths full of fangs and tentacles and stuff. And it winds up in somebody's basement and grows and grows. It was vaguely, vaguely Lovecraftian, but didn't really have that Lovecraftian punch or mood to it. Some people seem to think it, you know, might as well be Godzilla. And all honor to Godzilla flicks. But I remember the first time in recent history that I saw the original 1954 Godzilla, I was really taken aback how this seemed like a real foreign film, not what we associate with Toho Studios ordinarily. And it had a genuine sense of impending doom and the insignificance of humanity against this titan that bears us no ill will, but is going to trample us into the rubble anyway. In a strange way, that was Lovecraftian.
Very true.
I was going to say the first Aliens versus Predator movie. It wasn't a great movie, but it was definitely Lovecraftian.
Yeah. The one race had created the other for sport, right?
Yeah, and the whole the idea of the cosmic horror, the previous, you know, the great old one sort of thing. Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Boy, it's hard to think of anything that hasn't been touched by Lovecraft. Del Toro was going to make a version of At the Mountains of Madness. But one of the reasons he said he finally didn't do it or wouldn't do it was that he was already involved in a similar venture, which I think was the movie Prometheus, which sort of had to do with tampering with pre-human alien things.
Just thinking of Prometheus. I was going to bring that up.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm curious.
Well, Prometheus was Ridley Scott, though, right?
Oh, well, maybe he was just saying there's a movie out there too much.
Right. He just didn't want to. Yeah. Like you're going to have two Napoleon movies at the same time.
Yeah.
That's why Stanley Kubrick can never get his Napoleon movie because people kept putting TV versions in
on. Oh, no.
That was his dream, a Napoleon movies.
Did you ever see Abel Gance's Napoleon?
No.
I got to see it at a real rare showing in South Jersey once, and it's in like CinemaScope anyway, but when you get to the Battle of Lombardy, I think, they lower two more CinemaScope screens on either side of it, so you get this incredible panorama, like I think no other movie has ever done since. That was and it goes on for hour after hour, and it's great stuff.
Wow, fascinating. So many good movies. Yeah, definitely so many good movies out there. On I think my list, and I wanted to also mention this. I don't know if you can say it's a horror movie. It's a young adult book that got made into a stop motion movie, Coraline by Neil Gaiman.
I've heard of it, but
it's so Gnostic. You know, somebody, this girl goes into another world and it's all fake, but it's all fueled by the children that she steals. There's this other mother. Who's this mechanistic being and steals the souls to sustain her fake world by enticing children. Ooh. So, and it's a wonderful, wonderful film. Obviously, Neil Gaiman. Well, you know, Bob, what happens to these male feminists? Sooner or later, they show their true self, and it's always a record of abusing women.
Oh no!
Which is what's happened to Gaiman.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So. I love Coraline. That's too bad to hear. Didn't know that.
Oh boy.
Well, I think 2020 just broke something. He did bad things. Let's put it that way. Many bad things to girls. So,
oh, brother.
Yeah, and it has an "They Might Be Giants" song in it. The father. Yeah, I love that where he's on the piano and the whole thing. That's, you know.
Yes.
Do you like animation, Bob? Do you like animated films, or you stay away from those?
I don't mind them. I just saw for the second time Del Toro's Pinocchio, which is amazing animation. And something else that I wasn't even completely sure was animation. It was so real seeming, but I guess my senility is showing again. I can't quite think of what it was. But they're okay with me. I don't mind.
Nightmare Before Christmas. That's a good one.
Somehow that struck me as too much like The Grinch. It seemed like a remake of The Grinch some way.
Or The Corpse Bride.
Yeah, I haven't seen that.
What City of Lost Children.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I did see that. Yeah, that was interesting. Yeah, that was the one where you had the guys, who the sect that blinded themselves and passed around this set of goggles or something that would give them some weird black light version of things. Yeah, that was really good.
Exactly, too. Yeah, and I guess as we get close to the end for this, which has been a very fun discussion, I just wanted to mention one of my favorite films came out last year. It's called When Evil Lurks, and it's an Argentinian film. And it is just, it was very powerful, very disturbing. And the plot is like, these demons are possessing people and they need an exorcist. And if a demon possesses somebody for a certain amount of time, it might open a portal where the king of the demons might come. And you think, well, it's very graphic, well acted, very intense. No big deal. But through the movie, it keeps saying, the protagonist saying, you know, God is dead and the church has failed. And you're thinking, well, he's being Nietzschean, right? He really is being Nietzschean. But as the movie goes, you go, oh, no, maybe he's literal. Again, Anatole France, the revolt of it. Maybe there was a war in heaven and the head demon was able to dethrone Yahweh. And now he wants to take care of humans, but he has to follow certain rules. He has to possess people down here in the material world. And it says the church lost its power, but then it talks about then came these serpent monks. Now, whenever you mention a serpent, and you know, you're talking Gnostic, Christian Gnostics most of the time, and they save the day because they come with this contraption, something that could have come out of the city of Alexandria, you know, the gears and the gold, and this contraption can destroy or fight the demons. And I thought that was the Gnostic part, but I love movies. The mythology is very vague, and I always like movies that are kind of vague, like the first Jeepers Creepers, where they give you hints of what the monster is, but they don't just lay it there, and you can use your imagination to fill in the blanks. So,
like Cloverfield, right?
Yeah. I like the ambiguity sometimes. I don't want spelled out to me.
See, I figure I don't have to watch Cloverfield because since you can't see the monster, if I haven't seen the movie, it's the same as not seeing the monster. So I could say I saw Cloverfield.
Reality was
the one before, but not much.
The one before that, Blair Witch.
Yeah, that was it doesn't spoon feed you everything. I love the ambiguity. You just don't know.
Just turn out your lights and wave a flashlight around. You've seen Blair Witch.
Oh, that's a
don't forget the nausea from the shaky cam.
Yeah.
I feel like Yoko Ono must have been a part of the production of Blair Witch.
Maybe she didn't even know she was using a camera technique.
Awesome. Well, Vince, any last questions from you or comment or anything from the audience?
Well, yeah. How about since we have the Bible geek with us, how does Halloween relate to the Bible? And you know, like they have All Saints Day and All Souls Day is kind of like the Orthodox version of Halloween, would you say? What do you have to say about that?
Let's see. I'm not sure it really fits biblically because it has to do with a sort of victory of light over darkness. The idea is that it's the last hurrah of the forces of evil because the next day, being All Saints Day, it will be such a blaze of holy light that they'll all shrink back into their graves or whatever. And so that it's the fact that they're even making this big show. So shows like what does it say in Revelation? The dragon it really goes into action, for his time is short. It's sort of that theme. And Halloween and trick-or-treating and costume parties, I think, are later than that. But the idea is in concert with it, because you're mockingly dressing up as the powers of evil. And the whole idea is that it's a joke and you're collecting candy and all that. And it's fun. That's like Martin Luther's famous saying, the devil proud spirit cannot endure to be mocked. So if you want to get rid of him, just laugh at him. And that's, again, part of the same idea, that you're making fun of the supposed frightening character of evil. But it's cyclical, whereas in the Bible, it's linear. It's going to end in one big bang at the end. But it's not unbiblical. It's just a sort of an interesting twist. The Bible itself, of course, has cyclical observation of events in the past, the Passover, the death of Jesus, etc. And this just is a cyclical anticipation of a future one, the eschatological victory of good over evil. It's not in the Bible, but I just find it infuriating that churches seem to think, oh, it's Satan's holiday. It's Satan's idiot. It's a Christian holiday. That drives me. Don't you know your own religion? I can see the number of other people's. But
well, the New Testament does have one ghost. Jesus, right? There's no other ghosts in the New Testament.
There's an interesting thing in Job, though, where one of Job's comforters tells him about a dream he had the other night, where a ghost passes him and he shivers, and it makes some statement about the inescapable mortality of man. What is this revelatory nightmare? And in fact, the Episcopal Church, in its Book of Occasional Services, has a service for All Hallows Eve, and there are readings, including that, the War in Heaven, Ezekiel's Valley of the Dry Bones, and Saul getting the witch of Endor to summon Samuel's ghost. And this is, I just love this. In fact, for a while I attended an Episcopal church. I said, hey, we got to do this on Halloween. Okay, we will. And then it turned out they wimped out and said, oh, let's just have a harvest festival.
My thought there is, I always thought that there was some connection between Halloween and All Saints Day with the church trying to get some control over Samhain.
That's possible.
Yeah. Wouldn't be surprised. Yeah. Or the Day of the Dead in South America. Yeah. So probably.
Yeah.
One of those. I think the audience mentioned some other good ones. The movie Nine, an animation movie, is extremely Gnostic too. Krampus. I don't know about Krampus. I don't think I've watched.
That's interesting. That's an interesting flick.
Yeah. No, I have. Unfortunately, I haven't watched it. Oh, and I wanted to mention too, speaking of the movie Long Legs, it's so bonkers, but in a great way, that the serial killer, I don't mind the spoilers because it doesn't spoil the big reveals, but he somehow connects T-Rex's bang-a-gong to the Book of Revelation. And he's like a glam rock guy. And I mean, think of the lyrics. And it's actually pretty smart. I mean, T-Rex's, Get It On. Get It On, the song, the famous song. Because there are lyrics like, well, you're slim and you're weak. You've got the teeth of the Hydra upon you. You dirty sweet, and you're my girl. And then it says, like, you've got a hubcap, diamond star halo with your cloak full of eagles. You dirty sweet, and you're my girl. And it talks about a woman in black and all this stuff. And very smartly connects T-Rex's Get It On to the Book of Revelations in a prophecy. Good writing. That's really good writing, whoever did the movie. Yeah, crazy guy like, well, the Nicolas Cage guy would certainly do it. Graham, any last questions before we wrap it up or comments?
No, I was just going to say they have a few other good ones from the chat. 13th Floor, Existence, What Dreams May Come.
Yeah, but those are obviously not. I don't think they're scary. I love them, but they certainly didn't scare me. They're just great Gnostic fare.
Yeah. Other than that, just it was fun to be here. Fun to spend some time with Dr. Price.
Thank you. Great to hear your voice after all this time.
You can go back to the ocean, Cthulhu. Go back to dreams.
My city's city going dream. Back.
I just did a Thongor story called Black Gods of Rillier, where Thongor visits the oddly angled city.
Very cool. Very cool. So, Bob, tell the audience, what are you up to? Books? I have your website, mindvendor.com, but what are you doing? You've got your podcast. Tell the audience, what are you doing so they can check your stuff out and buy your books?
Yeah, on the Wise as a Serpent channel with my pal, Bishop Ray Taylor, an interesting bishop who started a motorcycle gang and ran a strip club and was a Pentecostal preacher, an amazing man, and has a PhD in religious studies from UNC. He and I do various things, and one is the Bible Geek, which at the moment is doing thematic episodes on different theological topics. But I also take questions from listeners. And then every Saturday at 4 o'clock, I do the Gnostic Sabbath, where I read something or talk about something that has obvious Gnostic interest and tries to edify and provoke thought. I have scripted a comic book called All Gnosis Comics, but my artists want me to start a GoFundMe, which terrifies me. I don't know how any of that stuff works, so I'm not sure it's ever going to come out. But the superheroes are the archons battling the Antichrist and so on and so on. And then I got a book coming out. Well, I have a whole series called the Lovecraft Pentateuch, that five volumes of Lovecraft's work, thematically arranged with extensive essays and stuff by me polluting it. And then sometime before the new year, my 600 plus page book, Houses of the Holy, A Higher Critical Survey of the World Religions, will be out, where I talk about 12 different religions, and including the Yazidis, the Druze, the Baha'is, and all the biggies too. So got all that stuff going on, and always writing books and books, articles, stories, and so on.
Awesome. Yeah, well, again, I've got his webpage on the show notes. Check it out. Can't wait for your book to come out. Very excited. First I'll say bye to Vance. Vance, thanks for keeping us company on this spooky season of The Witch.
It's a lot of fun. Great to see you, Bob. And
you too.
Great to hang out with you, Graham and Miguel. And have a happy Halloween.
I will. I hope you do.
Yeah, and well, Rick. Keep those horror movies running there.
Yeah.
And Graham, thank you for coming tonight, too.
Oh, it's a lot of fun. I wouldn't have missed it. Happy Halloween, everybody.
You too.
Yes, indeed. Yes, Bob. Yes, as always, it's great to talk to you. And keep watching those movies and writing those books. And yes, happy Halloween.
You too. May the great pumpkin be with you.
Indeed. And for everybody else, thanks for being here. And hope you have a good Halloween week. The scariest thing might actually be November 5th. And that's Guy Fawkes Day too. What a coincidence. What a coincidence. But that'll be the scariest thing. But as Julian of Norwich said, all shall be well, and all shall be well, and all manner of things shall be well. So everybody, take care and have a good Sunday and the rest of your Halloween week. Take care, everybody, and thank you.
See you guys.
Yeah, sure thing. Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
This just in, hot off the bench press. Planet Fitness has added new strength equipment. Save $28 or more when you join today, and you can be one of the first to try it out. We're raising the bar with new benches, and our new hack squat will have you actually looking forward to leg day. Plus, we're still repping all of the best-in-class equipment we've always had, with most clubs open 24 hours, so you can work out your way on your time. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more. Just $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 10th. See home club for details.